So the latest measurement of President Obama's sinking approval is not good news for the White House. The most recent Rasmussen Reports daily presidential tracking poll shows that only about 27% of the nation's voters, quote, strongly approve of the way Barack Obama is performing his presidential duties. Meanwhile, 45% strongly disapprove. A presidential landslide that becomes a precipitous slide in the polls in just 2 years. But how unusual is this?
Not.
I mean, well,
I'm
gonna
say
I wonder,
it's not unusual.
We want to go back and check and sort of explore, you know, what this means that presidents who win end up losing 2 years later. Remember election night 1994?
Amazing. This is truly a wildly historic night. I mean, this is just
Newt Gingrich, who would become the Speaker of the House, having a very good night in November of 1994. Bill Clinton, not so nice.
This is no ordinary time. And on Tuesday, the voters reflected their frustration with the pace of change.
And Republicans took over the House of Representatives in 1994. President George W. Bush thought it was going to be fine in 2006.
Actually, I thought we were going to do fine yesterday. Shows what I know.
But the rollback in 2006 for the Republicans eventually became the wave that elected Barack Obama. And let's think back to 1982. Here's Bruce Morton, CBS correspondent, talking about what happened to Ronald Reagan, who was elected in a wildly popular mandate in 1980, but in 1982?
We asked people on our national exit poll if their votes for a member of Congress were meant as a referendum on President Reagan. And by and large, they said yes, and by and large, they said that they were voting against President Reagan.
You know, what does this mean? There's a temptation to blame the president and to say that the president could have done something to prevent this.
Well, there's always, I mean, for everything that happens, there's the temptation to blame the president.
Pundits take that temptation and spend all their time talking about that.
They make a living out of that.
But it seems to me this is more a window on the electorate itself. It's more about us than it is about them, those presidents. And here to discuss it, we're thrilled to have David Remnick, the author of The Bridge, The Life and Rise of Barack Obama. He joins us from home. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
Also the editor of the New Yorker magazine. What do you think this ritual, and I think it's fair to say that it is a ritual, of off-year declines for presidents, even if they were popularly elected 2 years before, what does it say about the volatility of the American electorate in our time?
Well, it's pretty hard to take the psychological temperature of a country historically, but what's easy to do is to point out this, is that it happens almost every time. It's much easier to point out the instances where it didn't happen, what I mean is an electorate that punishes the president at the polls. And if you look back in our political history, it's only in 1934 when the Republicans really had nothing to offer on the Depression and FDR was deep into his reform program, and in 2002 when George Bush was wildly popular after 9/11 when the president's party didn't get punished. And there were a few times where the punishment was rather light. For example, after the Cuban Missile Crisis in 62, the Democrats did all right. In 1990, the Republicans under George Bush's father, did okay because of the Iraq War, which was very popular.
And
we're talking about the first Iraq War. And in 1998, Bill Clinton, who had been really wiped out in 1994, did very well because the Republicans were punished over their behavior over the impeachment situation.
It seems to me, David Remnick, there are two lessons here at least. One is that anger in the American electorate has a hard time landing. It flies well, but it has a difficult time landing. But when it does land in a coherent reform program, in the case of FDR, or the 9/11 kind of consensus that was short-lived but was real in 2002, then the government moves forward. Presidents, get rewarded, not punished.
But the punishment is the regular pattern, and some pretty serious presidents, including FDR in 38 or Truman in 50, got just wiped out, or LBJ in 66. The question is, with Obama, why is this going to happen? Why is he very, very likely going to lose the House and have the Senate narrow on him? And the answer is they're pretty simple, I think. First of all, and second of all, it's the economy, and it may be all the way through tenth of all. The economy is at a 9.6 unemployment rate, which is dire, and the rhetorical or political strategy of continuing to blame the Bush administration, no matter how legitimate that may be, and I have my own thoughts about that, just doesn't work sufficiently to turn the tide.
Well, David, let me ask you on that point. Perhaps we are what we're really talking about is impatience. I mean, when Reagan lost in the midterms, they said the voters said they had wanted a change faster. And Clinton, you just heard a cut of him saying the voters expressed their frustration with the pace of change, and that appears to be part of the problem with the Barack Obama as well. Are Americans just too quick to make decisions?
Again, it's very hard to take a kind of psychological temperature, but the numbers would indicate that. But also remember how historic the election was 2 years ago, and the states that Barack Obama, as a Democrat, much less an African-American Democrat, won, and it's not hard to imagine that they flipped back. Look, we had a Democrat win Virginia, North Carolina, Colorado, and the call it the glamour of or the excitement of electing a first African-American president is now long in the rearview mirror. And in fact, we're now at a political stage of our development where we're still seeing some huge proportion of the American people wondering whether Barack Obama, about his religion, there's a racial tinge very often to some of the more outlandish rhetoric on the right. There's also an ugliness here, and it's not without its influence on the overall.
I'm wondering if, and you know, we'll go in a moment here, but David Remnick, if candidates often have trouble differing between running for office and governing, I'm wondering if the electorate has that same issue, that we're deluded into thinking during presidential elections that the election of a new president, even a historic person like Barack Obama, constitutes getting something done, and then we discover over the next 2 years that, in fact, we've done nothing.
Well, the irony is Barack Obama has gotten a tremendous amount done. He passed the biggest social reform package of anybody in a generation.
So is it about message?
Pardon me?
Is it about message, not getting the message out?
No, I think it's about the economy. I think when you have 9.6 unemployment and foreclosures all over the place and people really, really in a state of economic uncertainty, it's very, very hard to say, and yes, but we saved the auto industry, and yes, we passed health care. It's just not penetrating to everyone the way you would want in a political sense.
The subtitle of your book is The Life and Rise of Barack Obama. Is this the high watermark, do you think, 2010?
Is it the high watermark?
Of Barack Obama.
I think the high watermark certainly was the election and the passage of health care. Right now, I think he's having a very, very tough time, and we haven't even mentioned Afghanistan,
right,
which no one sees a good ending to.
David Remnick, editor of The New Yorker magazine, author of The Bridge, The Life and Rise of Barack Obama, talking about the sophomore slump for Barack Obama and other presidents down through history. David, thanks so much.
Thank you.
From the history of presidents, the future of the country this morning, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton gives a speech later today that tries to identify America's place in the world. What is our place in the world? Policeman, helper, has been? You can weigh in on that. Start your message by texting the word take and your answer. That's to 69866. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
Come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.